Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. It is April 14th. I'm Ann Makovic. We start with the Iranian drone and missile attack against Israel. Iran reportedly sent hundreds of airborne weapons last night toward Israeli territory, and that follows an Israeli airstrike on an Iranian consulate in Syria earlier this month. Israel says most of the Iranian weapons last night were intercepted and that damage on the ground was minimal. Bradley Blackburn has the latest on the conflict.
The battle lit up the night sky over Jerusalem. Israeli air defenses appearing to intercept incoming Iranian strikes.
Tonight, wide-scale attack by Iran is a major escalation.
Israel's military said Iran fired more than 300 missiles and drones towards Israel, and 99% were intercepted. They reported minor damage to a military base and said a 10-year-old girl was severely injured by shrapnel, but there were no other known casualties.
We're operating at full force to defend the state of Israel and the people of Israel.
Overnight in Tehran, crowds celebrated Iran's first ever direct attack on Israeli territory. Iran's supreme leader had vowed to respond after a strike on Iran's consulate in Syria at the beginning of the month that killed seven military officials. With drones still in the air, Iran's embassy to the UN posted on X, the matter can be deemed concluded, going on to warn Israel and the U.S. against further action.
There is a significant potential for an escalation into a broader regional conflict.
President Biden cut short a trip to Delaware to return to the White House, where he met with national security leaders. The White House said the president spoke by phone with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, reiterating the U.S.'s ironclad commitment to Israel's security. The Pentagon said U.S. forces intercepted dozens of missiles and drones during the attack.
Well, lawmakers here in the U.S. are now focused on what comes next. Congressman John Garamendi told us last night he is concerned about how Israel will respond to the attack.
I am very, very worried. It is a very, very significant escalation in every conceivable way. Is it over? I doubt it. So we're looking at a situation that is right now spiraling, not out of control, but certainly it's escalatory.
Well, the attacks are going to have ramifications not just in the Middle East and the wider region, but across the world, including right here in the Bay Area. Amanda Harry has that story.
Tensions are growing again in the Middle East.
I was a little bit surprised when I heard that there was a swarm of drones and potentially missiles that were headed towards Israel because these are fairly slow moving.
San Jose State University political science professor Kartika Shashi Kumar says she was surprised Iran gave Israel so much warning.
When I thought about it in more strategic terms, it became clear that these were intended to send a signal to Iran's own domestic population and also to fulfill a promise that the Iranian leaders had made to their people. And they weren't really intended to inflict military damage.
She says these waves of strikes appear to be in retaliation for the bombing of the Iranian embassy in Syria.
The fact that it chose this one is in some ways a hopeful sign, but it doesn't mean that the danger is past because the option remains for Iran to escalate further if it chooses to. And it also depends on how Israel reacts and how the rest of the world reacts to today's incidents.
Including the Arab and Jewish communities in the Bay Area. Tyler Gregory with the Jewish Community Relations Council says they're hoping for de-escalation efforts.
So I think they're smart enough to know not to turn this into World War III. That's what all of us are hoping and praying for.
And Laura Kiswani with the Arab Resource and Organizing Center says she also wants to see the violence end and the U.S. to offer less support to Israel.
In the same countries and places the United States is arming, in the same countries where these wars are taking place. And what it means for those people, including myself, who have family and loved ones who are now at the receiving end.
As we head into the election season, Shashi Kumar says President Biden is likely feeling an unprecedented amount of pressure to properly handle this conflict.
So this issue is, of course, an international relations issue, but it has important ramifications for his campaign because within his core constituencies, young people, Muslim Americans, Arab Americans, people of color, Biden has to keep all of them satisfied while at the same time fulfilling his obligations to long-standing ally Israel.
Shashi Kumar says many people are being impacted by the conflict right here in the Bay Area. She recommends keeping that in consideration and being kind to one another.
Despite countless threats, this is the first time Iran has ever launched an attack directly against Israel. You can stay up to date on the very latest on our free streaming channel, CBS 24/7, the CBS News app, or on our website, kpix.com.
Good morning. Low pressure that bedeviled us on Saturday continues to spin offshore. It's forecast to continue anyway. And so we get a chance of showers lingering today. But in general, the tendency is going to be for things to begin to dry up. But you can see that there's still, you know, some showers lingering offshore as of last night. And so there's a forecast for maybe a sprinkle or two today. Forecast highs will be in the low 60s. The good news, if you like sunshine, is there is more on the way. We'll detail that when we cover the forecast. But first, here's the news.
Yes, some of the women now accusing former mayor of Windsor, Dominic Fapoli, of sexual assault spoke out on Saturday, and that was after State Attorney General Rob Bonta said he will not file charges against Fapoli, saying there's not enough evidence to move forward with the case. The alleged victims are disappointed and angry about this decision. Dalin has their story.
Attorneys say 15 women have accused Dominic Fapoli of sexual assault. Four of them attended Saturday's press conference. The other women say they're dealing with different stages of healing and are still uncomfortable to appear on camera with their stories. Fighting back tears and raw emotions, Farah Abraham questions the Attorney General's decision to not file criminal charges against Dominic Fapoli.
I wanted to start off with a question. This has been so hard. How many rape victims does it take to get a rapist criminally charged?
The Florida social media influencer and reality TV star says Fapoli drugged and raped her in 2021.
Reporting my rape will forever be one of the best decisions of my entire life. And if it prevents one other woman, child, man from being raped, this press conference will make all the difference in the world.
Ms. Abraham says she initially experienced a lot of internal anguish and self-blame.
Overcoming panic attacks, chronic body pain, completely going to rock bottom, depression, suicide. I am really sad that I had to experience this and it affected all of my core beliefs.
She met three other women at the press conference who also accused the former Windsor mayor of sexual assault. One of the women spoke briefly.
We are shocked that even with the large number of women from all over the globe who have come forward, that this is still not considered enough for a criminal conviction. We are horrified at the prospect of waiting for the next victim who may or may not have the courage to come forward.
The money was never the focus. The focus was always getting a predator behind bars for the safety of others. But when the criminal justice fails, we find justice where we can get it.
Attorney Tracy Carrillo is representing seven women in a civil case against Fapoli. There are a total of three civil cases going after him. The former Windsor mayor resigned in 2021. He has always denied the allegations. He now lives in Italy. But after the attorney general's decision, he said in a media report he may come back to the North Bay.
It is not surprising to me that Mr. Fapoli thinks that he can come back and lead the same life that he was leading. In response to that, I hope he's watching, because I hope he does come back, because I'd love to talk to him.
Ms. Abraham says she's still in therapy, but wants to speak up and encourage other victims to come forward.
The one thing that I did was I took myself out of the world for 28 days and I was put at a trauma center. And that's what helped me get back to where I'm at, to continue on, to even be able to be around men again. I did a 12-step program for relationships, and I am lucky to have a very supportive partner at this time in my life.
The attorneys say two of the civil cases are going to trial next year.
As Dom mentioned, Dominic Fipoli now lives in Italy. We reached out to him to try to get a response, but have not yet heard back. BART in Muni, still struggling to get riders back on board. BART's weekday numbers are about 60% less than before 2020. Now, Muni says they have an added problem, an increase in people skipping the fare. Kelsey Thorit has that story.
Fare evasion is not a new problem for SFMTA, but Executive Director Jeffrey Tumlin says they've seen a significant spike in people not paying to ride Muni since the pandemic.
When we stopped charging fares, stopped inspecting fares during COVID, it's taken us a while to get our fare collection rate back to where it should be. So what we've seen is about an 8 percentage point increase in fare evasion.
To try and crack down on evaders, Tumlin says SFMTA will be adding dozens of additional fare inspectors. Tumlin says the inspectors will rotate through every Muni line in the city.
We try to make sure that the distribution is random. We also want to make sure that if you're a low-income resident, that you're no more likely to get inspected than if you're living in a wealthy neighborhood. So we make sure the distribution across the city is pretty even.
Tumlin says only about 20% of SFMTA's revenue comes from fares. But with ridership still well below pre-pandemic levels, every dollar counts. Still, he says it's a delicate balance between hiring more inspectors and getting fare revenue up.
It costs more to get to 100% than you actually make in fare revenue. So what we're trying to find is that optimization point with fare inspectors where the cost of each new fare inspector is more than paid for through an increase in fare compliance and fare revenue.
Tumlin says his goal is to make every Muni passenger feel like they're all contributing their fair share for the use of public transit. He says passengers can expect to see the new inspectors on buses and trains very soon.
As for BART, this past December, they put up new anti-fare jumping gate prototypes at the West Oakland station. Just 2 weeks ago, the Civic Center station also got one at its elevator gate. BART plans to install these new gates at 8 additional stations. You can see them here on the map. The agency says riders can expect new fare gates at every station in the Bay Area by the end of 2025. Coming up.